Emma is, you know, well known to us as a blind leader, very committed to disability advocacy, community transformation, to BCA, because she was CEO for quite a long time, that is commitment. I'm going to stand aside and leave it to Emma for taking us through the first session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, everybody. We've lost a bit of time, so we'll get straight into it. And I think that our panellists will be well known to you, so I'm not going to read out their bios. They're also in the program if you want to read them. On my far left, we have Steve Richardson. And sorry, Ransley Richardson. Bloody hell. Steve Ransley Richardson. We have Zell Ischel with us, who is replacing Lauren Henley at the very last minute because Lauren's unwell. So thank you so much, Zell. I really appreciate that. We've had a briefing. She knows exactly what she's doing. It's all good. Myself, and on my right, I have Dan Stubbs, who I don't think anyone will know. But anyway, he's some bloke from Melbourne. I think he's a commissioner, actually. But anyway. So we are here today to talk about the very questions which Zell raised yesterday, which is why she has had the dubious honour of joining me on this panel. We want to talk about the use of disability support workers in various contexts, and we want to talk about the good things that support workers have brought to our lives, but we also want to talk about some of the elephants in the room. About, you know, whether or not support workers actually enhance or erode our independence and those sorts of things. So when we did the preparation session for this panel, I thought we might have about three or four questions. By the time we'd finished the conversation, I think I wrote down 10. So we're probably not going to get through them all, but I do want to start by putting a question to each of you first to get us started, and that is, do you use disability support workers, and if so, in what areas of life, and if not, why not? So I might start with Steve. Do you want to start us off? Oh, you haven't got a microphone. I thought you were just ignoring me.
No.
I'm so used to it that I just...
Not on this occasion, no.
No, there should be one. There should be one there. Just speak. Just start speaking, and then it should...
No, nothing. I don't know.
You don't have one.
Can we just use yours?
Oh, my God. Yeah, whatever. Yep.
There is just...
Sorry, we're having a bit of a microphone challenge, gotcha. Apparently.
I got it.
Here we go.
Thank you, Emma. In response to your question, yes, I do use support workers, mainly for cleaning, house cleaning and things like that, ironing, which I struggle with a little, and also to... You help get to doctor's appointments, sort of the pool, things like that when I'm doing daily activities.
Excellent. Thank you. Zell, do you want to tell us your...
I'm still learning how to use, like, when to use support workers, because all my life I've had to, you know, learn to do things myself. And one of the things that I was thinking about before I got on the NDIS was, do I really need a support worker? Since I've been on the NDIS, I've said, yeah, actually I do, so I'm glad I've got them. I use them mostly to help around the house, to be honest. I don't need anyone to take me out and about. I'm pretty good at that as it is. Having said that, I've had BCWA events, and the last event I had, I think it was a quiz night, and I had a support worker with me, and it did make my life so much easier to have someone. She did so well. I didn't have to tell her anything. She knew what to do. So in those instances, I really enjoy having a support worker. So that's what I mean. Like, I'm learning still when I can let go and say, okay, it's helpful to have someone else around. But generally, I still, when I travel and get around, I tend to get around on my own. But I do love that home help.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Sel. And I agree. My experience is that I didn't think I needed them and then started using them. But I do think for me, I often use them in big conference settings where I have to network and it's really hard to find people in those settings. So that can be really helpful. And also, I do use them to get out and about as well. I find that makes a big difference to me. I probably don't travel independently as much as I used to, apart from when I'm travelling interstate, of course. But yes, so I do tend to use them a fair bit for those sorts of things. Now, Dan, I got you onto this panel for a reason. Do you want to tell us what it was? Do you know?
I thought it was for my charm, my wit, and my excellent repartee. I mean,
yeah, that goes without saying, of course. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I think I'm the anomaly on this panel. I don't generally use support workers. That's probably one of the reasons. The closest I come to that is that, you know, I use cleaners to, you know, someone come in and clean the house and do things around the house for me. But as strictly support workers, I don't actually use support workers. But maybe the other reason why you wanted me on this panel is my job is actually all about support workers. So the organisation that I lead regulates all support workers in Victoria, regardless of whether they're funded by NDIS or the many thousands of disability support workers who are funded outside of the NDIS.
Yes.
You know, as many of you would know, there's some support workers funded by the NDIS, but there's thousands of support workers in schools, in health settings, and in other places in our community funded by other sources other than the NDIA.
Yeah, that's you got that right, 10 out of 10. I'll give you a Freddo Frog or something after this session. That was very good. Although I have to go and buy some. So let's get to the kind of thorny question, which I think really is the catalyst for why we're having this conversation, and that is, do you think, and again I'm going to put this to all of you, using support workers has made you more or less independent? This time I might start with you, Zell.
Thanks. More or less, I think support workers, I wouldn't say they make us independent because we are relying on somebody to do things, which we sometimes need to, and that's fine. Independent, maybe more convenient, is the word that I would use. And the fact that because now we don't have to beg and plead with family members to take us here and to do this for us and to do that for us, it's kind of liberating in that sense. But I think the issue is that we're okay because we learned to be independent. We didn't have the NDIS all our lives. The problem, I think, is the generations now that are going to be coming in the NDIS years, because as children and as we grow up, we get everything done for us, and it's always been that way. And now with support workers, people are getting paid to do things for us instead of encouraging us to do it. And I think it's always been our own personality that's actually said, I actually will want to do this myself. That's always been the case. But I think now more than ever, the parents are pushing the kids to use support workers. You know, if I was a parent, I might do the same because I want to make sure my child is going to be safe, you know. But it's also going to take from that child that resourcefulness of how do I cope with situations when things don't always go the way they should. And, you know, there's always now going to be someone to back them up in situations where really they could use their own initiative. But I do think if the person has a strong personality that they'll still be able to get through that. Really depends on what they're going to want in life and how they're going to go about getting it. So I think on the whole, it might build a greater reliance, but I do think occasionally you'll get someone coming through with a strong personality who will still take their own independence into their own hands.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, that definition of independence, we had a session about that last convention, I think, is really interesting, and the question of how you define independence, because independence doesn't necessarily mean you have to do everything yourself. It just means that you have to find a way to get it done. Dan, what do you think about this?
I think one of the things that I see in the support worker community is a variety of ways that different support workers operate. And my view of what a really good support worker looks like is someone who's actually supporting people to participate in community. Now, that will look different for all sorts of people. There are some people with disability who supporting that person just to leave their room is a big, important step. It can be a long journey. And then for other people, it's about supporting them in settings where there's a large number of people and they want to try and network and that kind of thing, and it's incredibly difficult. Or sometimes it's a matter of assisting someone to just get around community and attend events where you want to participate with other disabled people or non-disabled people. So it will vary quite widely, but I think it is about supporting people in participating in the way they choose to.
Absolutely.
Can I just add something?
Yeah, sure.
One thing that really bugs me quite a bit is the NDIS paying support workers rather than giving us a bit more money for our transport. Because for me, and I still can't get myself to do this, right? I cannot bring myself to pay someone for 5 hours to take me to an event and sit around and do nothing until it's home time. What a waste of money. I can't do it. But people do it, and I don't judge them. But I just think
And actually, that probably brings me on to my next question. I think there are lots of reasons why people do it. I have certainly done it. And one of the reasons I've done it is because I think some of you probably know that I also have an anxiety disorder. So,
But that's different.
It is different, but that's exactly the point I was... I know. But that's exactly the point that I was coming to, is that it is different. And lots of people have multiple reasons. And what you just said about not judging, I think, is so important, because I hear lots of judgment in this community towards people who choose to use support workers. And most of the time, the people who are doing the judging don't know the story behind that person's life. So I think it is really important we put the leave the judgment at the door. Steve, you have multiple disabilities. How has that influenced your decision to use support workers?
So I think for me it's sort of helps, because sometimes you don't know when you're going to be in a situation that's risky. So sometimes you get out of a taxi or you're going somewhere other and you step out into a gutter and you're maybe not in a familiar place because the cab's dropped you at the wrong spot, which has happened to me, and I nearly had an accident. So knowing someone who's doing support work, I say we can go to a spot and that person can then do a recce about the environment. And I had a very good one in Brisbane. Now I have a couple of really good support workers in Hobart who sort of know my condition and know what I'm sort of looking for in, you know, rough terrain, gap here, step there. This is a really rough footpath. And they might try to help me find the best way to navigate that. And I'm not saying with regard to O&M. I'm just saying, say I've got to go to somewhere for the first time that I haven't been before. A lot of the anxiety is taken out for me when I have a support worker. I think Del touched on just to reiterate what Zell was saying before, though. I think sort of this whole, and not judging anyone, but it disturbs me when I hear stories about You know, the young kids actively saying, and this is something that I've anecdotally heard, so they've said, I don't want to learn this stuff.
Yep.
I've got a support worker. So my view is that, and I'm not judging you, but I'm saying even if you don't want to do that, it's important to do it. I mean, when we were going to school, we wanted to do this. I had 4 years in a wheelchair at school. As soon as I got out of the chair, I wanted to do the things that my friends were doing, getting public transport, getting independent, going to the exhibition, things like that. I saw it as, and I'd like, if any young people are listening today, my view is it's your rite of passage as a young person. In the same way that your sighted peers are learning to drive, my nephew learned to drive, his mum never sees you anymore. He's independent, he's running around doing stuff. And Emma, you've talked about Lucy being the same, but yes. My view is it is your rite of passage. Even if you don't want to do it, even if you don't want to lose it later on, for goodness sake, learn it, because you never know when the NDIS might be severely restricted or not be there at all. And then where are you going to be?
Yeah, I think that is such a good point. And I think you and Zell have both made it extremely well, which is it's okay to choose how you want to do the thing, but make sure you have a choice. Make sure you give yourself a choice, because if you only ever use support workers, then you don't have that choice, because you actually don't have the skills to do it any other way. And I think it is important to for our self-esteem and our self-worth to know that if we need to, we can get things done. I think that actually matters. So,
can I actually also make the point that there are people who are now out and about who would never be without support workers?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We do have to acknowledge that. What, Zell, do you think is... You were talking about this a little bit before, but what do you think is the mindset shift that people need to make in order to want to use or to feel comfortable using a support worker? Because some people really struggle with that.
We talk about, in the NDIS, one of the biggest catchwords is choice and control. And I think we need to keep that in mind and not lose the sight of choice and control. I have a support worker. I can control when I choose to have a support worker and when I choose not to. And I think that kind of mentality would be really important for people's development.
Mm.
Can I just butt in, sorry, quickly? And Del, your point before was sort of saying also valid, I think, too. We have to sort of, to get technology, things like that, we have to jump through hoops. We have to have letters of recommendation and all these kinds of things. A support worker, you just do your claim and it's through. No questions asked.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. Dan,
I think we need to really learn about choice and control. Like, what does it mean?
Dan, do you want to say anything about that?
That's okay. I think getting over that hurdle of being willing to use a support worker is, it's like so many things in our kind of development as people with disabilities. You know, some of us resent being identifiable as a person with disability, and that's something that we all have to get over at some point. And it's all, I think, part of just recognising that to understand and show the world that I have a disability and it's nothing to be ashamed of, and sometimes I need to rely on people, but in fact, when I rely on people, I'm in control. I'm not actually putting myself in their hands. I'm the boss. When I'm using a support worker, they're doing things for me at my direction, kind of thing. And that's the... Putting the person with disability, putting us in the driver's seat, is really what we're doing, and we need to recognise that we're the ones, you know, with the power, and we are empowering ourselves in that relationship.
Yeah, I did a presentation, funnily enough, last week to about 100 support workers, and one of the things I said to them was, "We are your teachers, not the other way around, because we are, and they do need to be trained up." I mean, God, I had one when my kids were really young, and she used to constantly step in and do the disciplining, and I used to have to say to her, stop, not your job, go out, come back in, do it differently next time. And actually, by the time I left Brisbane, she was, I think, one of the best support workers I've I've ever had. I did train her up well, I've got to say.
Well done. I
wanted to ask Steve, how do you think the remote visual interpreting services like Be My Eyes and Aira have changed the way that you access support?
To a degree, to some sort of for sort of low level stuff, I suppose, for sort of looking for things that I need in the house that I can't find, or you know, reading the Uber Eats or trying to determine what the Uber Eats people have delivered.
Yep.
those sort of things. I find Aira and things like that really useful for, you know, we've used it in a few situations where I've had a group of totally blind people around the table, and we've sort of, sometimes it's trial and error, sometimes, well, it looks yellow, so that's probably going to be the lamb curry or something. So, but I think that...
you've just taken me right back to Saturday night at your house. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say that it's completely, you know, it hasn't 100% made it accurate, but yeah, there are times when it's very useful. But in combination with support workers, I think that these things are great. And, you know, once again, this is my view. Some people use them differently. I would never travel through an airport with one, because even though airports are fairly friendly, you know, they don't have a lot of steps in them and things like that, I don't know that I want to rely on one to get me from Terminal A to Terminal D in Los Angeles or somewhere.
Yeah,
no,
you do have to pick your battles. Dan, you wanted to jump in, but before you do, I'm just going to ask you another question which you can answer at the same time. Do you think that our use of support workers lets mainstream organisations off the hook when it comes to accessibility?
Yes. Oh, it's such a challenge, this one, isn't it? Because, of course, we need to be able to walk into a shop or get on public transport and be recognised as having a disability and therefore needing some kind of support, whether it be... I don't know, like we take for granted in Melbourne now that, you know, trains have announcements about what station there is and all that kind of thing. And if we didn't demand all that accessibility because we always had support workers with us, that would absolutely be letting those organisations off the hook. And I really sometimes struggle with that. But I think at the end of the day, if we come back to those principles about... Our support workers are helping us participate, and we're not necessarily seeking them to be there to replace what maybe a private company or any mainstream organisation ought to be doing. We still need that empowerment of having full information about what's around us or where we're going. That's that's the crucial thing. And our support worker might be with us, say, in a shopping centre to assist us in a way, but the mainstream organisations still need to do their job. And I'm confident, you know, that's what organisations like ours, like BCA, does. It advances our rights in all those mainstream accessibility issues, and we need to keep on doing that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to comment on that?
Yeah, go on.
Yep. Richard?
Okay. I'm thinking that the same. That sort of annoys me that organisations are saying... Now that, you know, people with NDIS programs, it's sort of the first question that gets asked now. You know, what's your plan number? So those without them, I'm not sure whether they are having to pay for services or just not getting the services that they previously got. And, you know, because NDIS is around too, maybe people aren't giving the donations that they once were, or even... You know, someone mentioned when we were having this discussion that I think it was Lauren. Then we had a lot of places in Melbourne, organisations, just businesses, won't help you. They sort of saying, well, you have a support worker for this now. You're not obliged to help anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the charitable organisations; it's also the mainstream ones.
Yeah, it's problematic. Zell, I feel like you want to say something.
Oh, I agree, but you know, I've all my life, not just now, I've intentionally gone on my own to places like banks and everything because then they have to deal with me.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know,
me too.
They've
me
got
too.
No one else to turn to.
That's so true.
You know,
yeah.
And sometimes they've just panicked and what do I do? And I'm like, you know, it's okay. Just I'll tell you what to do. And I've always been able to get around that way. But there's now an expectation that the NDIS is going to solve every problem around disability. And if you've got a disability, you go to the NDIS, you know. Yeah. So part of what I do when I'm not working for the NDIS is I have my own business and I do my own disability awareness trainings, and I make sure that I emphasise that the NDIS does not do everything, and you actually have a responsibility to make your organisation inclusive,
yes,
because there's also a lot of people that don't get the NDIS, yes, and I make that very clear.
Such a good point.
The other point that I wanted to make is around IRA. Guys, I love IRA. Yes. For someone who is so spontaneous like me, I can't get a support worker at 3 o'clock in the morning to read my receipts.
That's outrageous.
Exactly right. What is wrong with these support workers? They're so lazy, aren't they?
why can't I just wake them up, you know? So receipts are great. And has anyone ever tried to read a receipt through AI?
Yeah, I have, and it failed.
A different result with every reading. I found that very rude.
Yes,
I found that out.
Yeah, there are some things you really need a human for.
Yeah,
absolutely right.
IRA, I've actually got IRA to help me put my training slides together because my friend who normally does it wasn't available, and I was like, what do I do now? So IRA, not everyone is skilled up to do it, but one girl, Sierra, is just bloody amazing. Knows everything about all the things that I need.
Yeah, some of them are just awesome. I'm in love with IRA as well. Although, as Graham Innes will tell you, that you do have to be very careful where and how you use IRA.
Yeah.
You certainly don't want to.
Who would be in the bathroom with a mirror in front of them? No one would do that, would they?
Anyway, moving on. I think we'll take some questions. Questions from the floor. Nothing is sacred within BCA.
While we get microphones, I just want to add to Zell's point about using technology. You know, I think it's I think helpful to think about support workers are part of that matrix of different supports we might get, including using, you know, seeing AI or those kind of things, and services like IRA and other navigational aids like Blind Square and that kind of thing. And I think we, to assist our independence and our participation, we need to, part of our job is to learn to use all these things. And also it's a skill on using a support worker well. And I think it's, we don't actually do enough learning about how we best use and work with support workers. All these things take us a bit of learning and a bit of practice, and it will ultimately help us participate and be seen more in community.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very, very important point.
I know we're running out of time, but there is an issue now with the NDIS and the new legislation where they don't want to pay for subscriptions like IRA.
Mm.
And I think we do need to do something about that, because
I agree. When I was at BCA, I pushed back very hard on them about that. And I don't know if BCA still is, but I hope they are, because it's a really important issue for us. I think we have quite a few hands up. So can we go to questions now?
Yes, it's Jane. I have a microphone at the moment. I just wanted to ask about what you feel about the sort of layer of dependence versus independence for this issue in regional areas where, maybe support work isn't as available and, say, the cost of transport is higher. What sort of has been your experience in sort of directing this to anyone on the panel who has
I'm going to get Dan to answer
practice?
This one.
Jane, it right across all areas of disability support, in the regional areas, it's become probably one of the most challenging things in what's euphemistically called the thin market problem of, there's only a few support workers, and sometimes support workers will have to travel across regions for hours to get to provide a few hours support for someone. And so I don't know what the answer is. I know that in different areas we've got a lot more promotion happening to get people to in this kind of work, but in regional areas, I think you're really up against it as far as your choice goes, and you've got to be a lot more organised to book people in ahead of time and all that kind of stuff. I really feel for people outside of the major cities. And let's be clear, in some of the major cities, people are having problems too getting support workers as well. So it's and of course, that's right across the economy. Every single part of the economy is actually having trouble getting workers.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
Who's
next?
Marilyn White, can you hear me?
Oh, hi, Miss.
No, mic's not on. Is it?
It's okay. All after this link.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, sorry. Can't be.
Yep. No. Happy birthday, Miss. Or are you getting your microphone?
Yeah, it's the mic. Yep.
That mic's not working.
It's not working.
Hello, is it working?
Yes. Hi, Lynn. Okay. While we're waiting, Lynn has something to say. Can anyone get a microphone to Lynn? Might not be best.
Got a question here as well.
Talofa, sorry, because I'm here to observe, I might as well take the opportunity. This is Ari from Samoa. First of all, thank you very much, Emma, for allowing me to observe and to be here. I come from the flip side of things, where what you all are saying is like a dream to countries like
yes.
us.
Yes.
And with a population of 200,000, and I was told that 2% of that population has a disability, and maybe 1% or 0.something% of those people who are blind. We don't have such a support system. The main support system is family. And when families get cranky, you get cranky as well, so you're stuck. But my question is, for the sustainability of such schemes like NDIS and other things that you as Australians who are blind have come so far in advocating, what's your strategy to keep opening the ears of government and telling them, well, yes, maybe the NDIS doesn't cover all of that, but please don't get rid of it, but make something better? What's your strategy? Thank you.
Well, I'm sure we've all got answers to that question. It's really good to hear your voice, Ari.
Yes.
Richo, do you want to say?
Yeah, I can start. I was going to say... I've actually travelled to, not Samoa, but I have travelled to Vanuatu. And I certainly, one of the nights I went to a village ceremony, the village chief who was running the show looked at me, looked at my cane and said, "You're the first blind person that's ever been into this village." So I felt it opportune to sort of show him how the cane worked and everything like that, because there's no concept and... not much education around this sort of stuff. So, and the same in Fiji. I was asking what happens to the blind populations here, and as you said, family. Mm. I think it's about sort of sustainability. I think it's the rules sort of keep changing about what we can and can't do, and it's difficult to say continue to do that if the landscape keeps changing and it gets confusing. But I think the important message that we need to continue to reiterate is that everyone's different and everyone's needs are different.
Yes.
And so we all have different disabilities. I have a bone condition and an eye condition. Other people I know are deafblind. Mm. So, and this also gets to the chase of... as individual support workers, we have to be vigilant in continuing to train them in the way that we need them to be to work for us. And, I don't mind if they ask the question, even they'll say, "How do I work with another blind person?" And I just say, "Ask them." They'll tell you.
Yeah, I get that question a lot, funnily enough.
Marilyn White from Melbourne.
Yes, thank you.
I missed out on being part of NDIS.
Yeah.
By a couple of months, I was too old.
Yes.
So what happens? Are there any supports that as I get older I could have? I'm now staying in an aged care place, but occasionally I might like to have a drive somewhere or, somewhere. I hear all these people saying, "Oh, my driver took me." And, I think, "Oh, my gosh," and that never happened to me. I'm just wondering, can anyone answer my questions? Thank you.
Mez, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Mez. I still think of you as the leader of the Sopranos at Braille Music Camp, but anyway. and happy birthday. Dan.
Mez, I think you're in a bit of a tricky spot. Because, of course, the My Aged Care funding, you either get that My Aged Care support when you're in your home and you have, you know, people can come in and support you. Not too unlike NDIS. There are some differences, of course. And then if you're then going to go into an aged care facility, I don't think you then can have the funding support for someone to come and assist you to take you out, unfortunately. Right. So what a massive anomaly you're stuck with there.
Yes.
I'm not sure. We might need to sort of have further discussions around BCA on how you kind of get that support, because like other people in aged care facilities, you want to be able to leave and participate, even though, you know, that's where you live. So I think that's a really... it's a really tough one.
Thank you.
Right.
Can I just make a quick point?
No, you can't. Sorry, Zell. Sorry, Zell. My God, I hate doing that to people. Sorry. Can I just quickly go to Lynn, because Lynn specifically asked me, and then we need to wind up. Sorry.
Yeah,
Lynn needs a mic. Maybe.
Somebody needs.
This fellow has had the mic for a long time. Can he please just ask his question?
No. Lynn?
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Emma. I'm glad, actually, that we just had... A bit closer?
That's
Is that better?
Yeah, hang on.
Okay, I'm exactly the same in that I missed out by a few months on the NDIS, and the only recourse I have is to my aged care. Dan, I'd actually disagree with you about there being not much difference between disability support in the NDIS and my aged care. I've been sitting here listening to what I think is a really interesting discussion about very important concepts, but it's been very NDIS focused. But there are those of us, and I think still many, who don't have this support and for whom the only system available to us is almost disability unaware. It's not in any way constructed around the kinds of things you've been talking about. And the concepts of choice, for instance, is almost irrelevant.
Yep.
So I think BCA has actually taken its eyes off that particular ball, and I would really like to see.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And sorry, BCA, love you all, but yes, I would agree with that. There was one other person. I'm sorry, Helen, but there was one other person who had the microphone for a long time and was waiting to ask.
Yep. Okay. It's Alana here. My concern with the new legislation with the NDIS is how are they going to do something called support replacement? So if they don't want to fund, I'm just giving an example, my understanding is if they don't want to fund a piece of assistive technology like a Braille device, they might fund a support worker to help somebody read their mail or something. That's my concern for down the track.
Yeah,
just an example, like a really silly example, but
it's a bit of a wait and see.
And I just think.
So look, I'm gonna wind us up, but I just want to say thank you so much to Dan, Zell, and Steve for joining me.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
In really 30 really seconds. Cool. Yeah.
Those of you who turn 65, you are going to be pushed by the government to leave the blind pension. Do not do that.
No, it's a good point. So thank you, everybody. Really interesting discussion. Really appreciate everybody being so open and frank in your comments. And back to you, Helen.
Thank you.